You're listening to the River East Church Podcast, a Jesus community for the world.
Good morning. It was May of 1959, and jazz legend John Coltrane was heading to the recording studio to meet the rest of his quartet. As usual, there had been no rehearsal. The four musicians were so talented and had played so much with one another that rehearsal just wasn't necessary. Instead, they would show up and just hit record. Jazz is all about improvisation, after all. You might as well commit, I guess. But on that day, Coltrane had something special up his sleeve, a song he had been working on for months called Giant Steps. When he arrived at the studio, he handed out, probably something like this, music to everyone, and he called for a super fast tempo. It's like almost 300 beats per minute. And they proceeded to record what is now one of the most iconic songs in the jazz world. A song so feared and revered that improvising on it is considered a rite of passage. So here's the melody they played that day. Seems pretty simple, right? As the recording continues, the band blazes past that melody and Coltrane begins to improvise. And it's like amazing, it's iconic. It's 178 bars of virtuoso on display. When his solo is done though, Coltrane then throws it over to Tommy Flanagan, who plays the piano. And it's now his turn to improvise, which is just how jazz quartets go. Tommy doesn't do so good. Flanagan's solo, it's kind of awkward. It's like he's holding on for dear life. So in a moment, I'm gonna play Flanagan's solo for you so you can hear what I'm talking about for yourself and see what I mean. His solo isn't awful by any means. It's not like he's a poor musician. Again, he's the best of the best playing with John Coltrane with no rehearsals. But even if you know nothing about jazz music, I think you're going to be able to pick up on how much he's struggling with giant steps the first time he saw it. So if you're new to jazz, here's some things you can look out for or listen out for. Listen for the way that his improvisation is halting and stilted. It's like he keeps tripping on something, like there's a rock in his shoe. Listen for, after a number of bars, he kind of just seems to give up. Like, he concludes his solo by just vamping on some chords, and it's fine, but it just doesn't have the energy or confidence that Coltrane has been bringing. And listen at the end for the way that Coltrane just rockets back in on his saxophone, kind of like to save the day. You can really hear how much Flanagan was struggling with his improvisation when you juxtapose Coltrane right beside him. Ready? Let's go. Can you hear what I mean? So again, Flanagan is a super talented musician at the top of his game, but that solo, I mean, it wasn't great. So what was it that caused him to struggle so much with this song, Giant Steps? And I ask this because for me, The answer to that question, actually, believe it or not, provides real insight into what's going on in Acts chapter 10 and 11 that we just heard read at length. I think, well, for me, it has allowed me to view how I can see my Christian tradition as we've been entering into what we've been calling borderland. So why did Flanagan struggle? Well, first of all, maybe you have this question. Who's to say he struggled at all? Like, isn't improv just improv? Who am I, Aaron Thiessen, to say what makes improv good or bad in the first place? So to test this theory, I played Flanagan solo, what you just heard, to Simone this past week to see what she thought, because she doesn't listen to jazz. And she said, well, you could have told me this is the greatest solo of all time, and I would have believed you, because jazz just sounds like people are just making things up. Maybe you feel the same way. And fair enough. If that's you, that is a valid starting point. But believe it or not, good jazz improv is not about making things up. Rather, the difference between good improv and bad improv is about the musician's ability to creatively navigate what some music scholars have called constraints. Now, constraints, scary word. What do I mean by that? Musically speaking, constraints are simply the particularities of playing a certain piece of music. So it can be things like the audience. A middle school band concert is going to be different than Jazz Fest. It can be the venue. It can be if the musicians know each other really well already. And then it can be things that are like intrinsic to the music, the speed that you're playing, the tradition this song comes from. And most importantly, the chords. So when it comes to improvisation, perhaps no constraint is more important than the chords of the song. Now, I don't want to get into too much music theory here, but every song you know exists within something called a chord progression. Chords are these groupings of notes that kind of, we can imagine they form the landscape of a song. Movement from one chord to another gives a song shape. It gives it direction. It gives it tension and release. Now, chords can have specific names, like this one's the first one on Giant Steps, it's B major 7. But just as often, they're simply referred to by a Roman numeral, which corresponds to the kind of tension or release they make in the music. So for example, a 1 chord, Roman numeral 1, that's always going to sound like a release, like home. And that's because it rests on the key center of the song. A 5 chord, for a bunch of cool harmonic reasons I won't get into, it always sounds like tension or distance from home. It wants to resolve back to one. So in the case of Giant Steps, this particular B major 7 is functioning as a 1 chord. It feels like home. Now, even if you don't know a lick of music theory, you intuitively already understand everything I just said. Because most pop songs are based on only 4 chords that are in one order or another. And it gives the music a familiar and an expected shape or drama. So those 4 chords are 1, 4, 5, and 6. And here's a quick example so you know what I'm talking about.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me.
Yes, I was there, I remember it.
Hope you get the sense. Do you hear how these familiar songs have a shape because of the chords? That pattern is called a chord progression, and it is a musical constraint. Every improviser needs to navigate a chord progression so that you can anticipate the tension and release, and then in your improv, match it. Or once you've mastered the chord progression, you can get creative with it. You can modulate it. You can know when you can bend it or even break it. So good improv is always done in reference to these constraints, even if they are breaking them in the moment. Bad improv usually doesn't understand the constraints to begin with. And this right here is why Flanagan struggled so much on his solo. Giant Steps has a chord progression that's the musical equivalent of an M.C. Escher painting. So remember, most songs have that single chord that works as a release of tension, that home chord, Roman numeral one. Giant Steps is wacky. It doesn't have a fixed home. Rather, what counts as home spirals as the song goes on, shifting dynamically between three homes. Three homes that are musically as far apart as they can possibly be. And it shifts those homes, remember, at almost 300 beats per minute. So in the first 14 seconds of Giant Steps, what counts as home changes 10 times. That's 10 key changes in 16 bars. So for those of you who don't know music theory, that would be a bit like if I asked you to have a conversation where every 2 or 3 seconds you switched between Mandarin, Arabic, and Spanish. Just languages that have almost nothing to do with one another. For those of you who do know some music theory, because I'm preaching at River East, here's a visual of how the Giant Steps spirals around the circle of fifths. It's crazy. Again, Flanagan was an accomplished jazz musician at the top of his game, and he could improvise brilliantly over traditional chord progressions without any rehearsal. But when Coltrane came in, he handed out this music, and he just hit record. Flanagan found himself literally at the beginning of a new era of jazz, and he had to improvise as best he could in the moment, adapting to Coltrane's strange new constraints in order to stay faithful to the song they were playing together. And poor guy, like, he struggled, you heard it. And then it goes on to be the most iconic jazz song of all time. Which brings us to the Book of Acts. So I tell you this story of Coltrane, Flanagan, and Giant Steps, because I personally can think of no better analogy for what is going on in the pages of Acts chapter 10 and 11. Well, and chapter 8 and chapter 2 and chapter 15 and many more, but I have to pick. Acts is a book about the early Christian church, a church that finds themselves at the borderland of their Jewish faith. They find themselves at a distance from their Jewish institutions. And they find themselves in these uncharted frontiers of what God is up to in the world. So you already heard it, but let me just summarize again the story of Acts 10. We start with Peter, Jesus' disciple extraordinaire. He's been christened by the Spirit in Acts chapter 2. He heals the sick in Acts chapter 3. He's an inspired preacher to his fellow Jews in chapter 4. And he even raises someone from the dead in chapter 9. So like for 10 chapters, Peter is on a roll. We might say that Peter had mastered the constraints of this early Christian movement and the holy music that his harmony with the Spirit provided was undeniable. But in Acts 10, Peter is hungry. So as he waits for a meal, he goes to the flat roof of his house and falls into a trance. And he sees a vision of a sheet being lowered to the ground by its four corners, filled with all sorts of animals that were considered unclean by the Jewish tradition, his Jewish constraints. Three times, the Spirit's voice tells Peter to get up, kill, and eat. To which Peter replies, no, I've never eaten anything that's impure or unclean. The voice replies, what God has made clean, do not call unclean. So think about this from Peter's perspective. For 10 chapters, the Spirit has been leading Peter on and has come through time and time again. But here, three separate times, Peter says no. For him, this particular move is beyond the pale. Because Peter's home so far has been his Jewish tradition, practiced by him and his ancestors for generations, all the way back to Moses. Like, how can he break with that spiritual home and eat what that home forbids? Like, if he were to do that, what would make him Jewish? And so he refuses. And the text explicitly says that Peter was bewildered by this vision from the Spirit. It made no sense to him. But the Spirit of God has been moving in the background of this story, whispering to a Gentile named Cornelius, drawing Cornelius and Peter together behind the scenes. Now remember, according to Peter himself, some Jews had cultural prohibitions against even entering the home of a Gentile. There's another constraint for you. But the Spirit doesn't seem to care. So long story short, Peter finds himself in the home of Cornelius, with whom he is not to associate, and the impossible happens. He preaches to the Gentiles there, he speaks the gospel, and then the events of Pentecost are repeated. But this time it's the Gentile outsiders who are speaking in tongues, and the apostle who's listening in astonishment. In this moment, it's as though the Spirit of God is in the role of Coltrane, handing out giant steps to Peter with no rehearsal. Here, the Spirit is introducing wild new constraints, constraints that are warping Peter's reality, constraints that now include Peter's Jewish home and also somehow include the home of the Gentiles without forcing either to change into the other. It's this spiraling, modulated harmony. And so then the Spirit goes first, time to improv, calls a fast tempo, offers the gifts of the Spirit to the Gentiles in this overflowing, ecstatic display. There's Peter, the role of Flanagan. You can almost hear the bewilderment in his voice in verse 47, where he says, these people have received the Holy Spirit just like we have, just like the Jews have. Surely no one can stop them from being baptized, can they? So Peter does his best. In the moment, he improvises on his Jewish tradition with the Spirit's new constraints. He proceeds to baptize the Gentiles despite the fact that Peter's tradition should not allow for this. The Gentiles have made no commitment to keep Sabbath. They do not keep kosher. They were not circumcised. But the Spirit has already led with this new chord progression, and the recording's live. Peter has to join in to make the music. And so he does the best he could. And usually that's where we stop the story. But that wasn't the end of the story for Peter. In Acts chapter 11, word gets back to the church in Jerusalem about what he did, his improv, hanging out with Gentiles and baptizing them without going through any of the usual procedures. So the church seems to corner Peter and accuses him of breaking with tradition. Him, he's the star disciple, he's the apostle. How could he do this? And it's absolutely remarkable how Peter defends himself. He doesn't cite scripture, not once. There's nothing in his Jewish tradition that anticipated or justifies what he did. He has to defend now the undefendable. And so he does the only thing that he can do in this moment is that he tells his story. I hope you heard step by step. He tells them about the vision of this sheet from the Spirit. He tells them about this chance meeting with Cornelius, arranged by the Spirit. He tells them about after he spoke with the Gentiles, the Spirit fell on them in the same way as it fell on the Jews at Pentecost. And then he concludes his defense with this kind of awkward Flanagan-esque improvisation. He says in verse 17, "So if God gave the Gentiles the same gift as he gave us, then who am I? Could I stand in God's way?" His only defense is his story of following the Spirit's new music and a question. In his story, each step was at the Spirit's lead. And now Peter's gospel music has entered into this new set of constraints, where, like giant steps, his spiritual home can no longer remain fixed. That doesn't delete his Jewish identity or render his scriptures irrelevant. They're still part of his musical repertoire. But Peter knew that where the Spirit leads, there is life, and life to the full, even if it means some creative navigation and improvisation of his own scriptures and tradition. And almost miraculously, the Jerusalem church listened to him and rejoiced. And so a question rings out through the centuries to us today. Like the early church, as we find ourselves in our own kind of borderland, you know, maybe at some distance from our own religious institutions, maybe at the frontiers of what it means to live a post-COVID, post-Christendom, or post-deconstructed faith. Like, there are challenges ahead. But as we see over and over and over again in the book of Acts, the Spirit was always already ahead of Peter, already in the spaces where he struggled to go, eternally playing this gospel song. And so wherever we are headed, we can trust that the Spirit is already there playing her music, though perhaps with some modulation to our ears. The question for us in our borderlands travels is, can we hear the gospel music playing? And when we do, how can we improvise faithfully on our Christian tradition, even if it's halting or stilted at first? I'll leave the sermon hanging on that 5 chord, and I'll leave it to you to decide how we can resolve back to 1, or which one we resolve to. But whatever the coming days may hold, may we have the courage to faithfully improvise to God's gospel song throughout time. May we honor one another with stories of the Spirit's transforming work in our lives, so that we might be aware of Christ's presence among us already. And may the Spirit lead us into borderland with her giant steps. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the River East Church podcast, the Jesus Community for the World. We are an Anabaptist church pursuing wisdom, prophecy, and compassion here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can find us online at rivereastchurch.ca. We hope you join us for next time, and until then, may grace and peace be with you.